good evening, Truth Seekers. Malloy here on the NOVEM Radio Network. Happy Monday. Once again, we emerge from the weekend with more news items to discuss than time allows. Where to begin? Well, we're going to talk about, you know, today was opening day in baseball season, 2007. We have a comment about that. Also, would-be presidential candidate and serial adulterer Newt Gingrich eliminates any Hispanic voters in his coalition of the racists and bigots by telling them to learn to speak English, the language of prosperity, instead of that ghetto language, Spanish. Jesus, God, these people crack me up. Let's see, maybe we should talk about the warning Bush received. We mentioned this last week after discussing Pat Tillman's heroic death just days after it occurred. Another warning he ignored, of course. And then there's the General Petraeus' meeting with Republican members of Congress in which they let him know he's got till August to turn things around in Iraq, or they're pulling their support. Oh, really? Gee, the generals in the wars now meet with the leaders of the minority party. Oh, well, that's nice. That's good. The veto backfire on the spending bill, maybe? Maybe we should talk about that, although that's very boring. Bush vows to veto the bill he needs to continue his massacre, and Harry Reid and Russ Feingold draft a replacement bill that sets even more stringent deadlines for withdrawal than did the first one. You gotta love that. You know, here, let me slap you. Oh, you didn't like that? Well, come here and slap you. Let me slap you twice. Or maybe it's the Supreme Court ruling on global climate change that flies in Bush's face over his refusal to regulate CO2 emissions from cars. Or the fact that the EPA does have the right to do that, even though the EPA or the Bush crime family or one of these thuggish bastards say, oh, we can't do that, you know. And the Supreme Court today, by a vote of 5-4, you know who the four were. Was it today? Yeah, I guess it was today. Voted that the EPA does have the right and should regulate CO2 emissions coming from cars. What else? Then there's a front page New York Times article about that former top staffer's realization that John Kerry was right about Iraq. Matthew Dowd, don't you love these guys? Kerry was right about Iraq, and that Bush continues his my way or the highway attitude toward everything, despite public opinion, poll numbers, or his own party's opinions. Stubborn little bastard, isn't he? No wonder his mother is, no wonder Bush is that way. His mother is such a gargoyle. I guess that was the only way he could revolt. And you can look at the fact that a rapidly diminishing number of his Republican consiglieres are standing with him, Bush, on his 2-year-old temper tantrum to keep Torquemada on his staff, other than Orrin Hatch. Orrin Hatch is just blind, deaf, and dumb. I mean, he really is where it concerns graft and corrupt. What? Is there something wrong? Huh? Maybe it's time to finish off Fredo. George, really, he's not looking too strong these days. What's that line? Buy me some peanuts and Cracker Jack. I don't care if I never get back. Well, as at one of the CBS News blogs today, no peanuts or Cracker Jack for Bush. He was invited to throw the ceremonial first pitch today at the Washington Nationals home opener against the Florida Marlins. He declined. White House spokeswoman, too much cappuccino Perino, says
the president loves baseball,
but blames scheduling reasons for his absence from RFK Stadium today. Actually, his public schedule didn't look all that crowded. He had a meeting about health savings accounts in the morning, another winning idea. This afternoon, he presented the Commander-in-Chief's trophy to the football team of the U.S. Naval Academy. That honor goes to the team that wound up with the best record among the military service academies. What, are there three of them? Four, maybe? Well, that was an important thing to do there, George. According to the blogger, by not going to today's game, Bush spares himself the indignity of being booed and jeered as he walks out to the mound Over the years, it's been a common occurrence for presidents to go on the field on opening day. And you can imagine Bush doing that. Back in 1992, our blogger writes, I remember covering the first President Bush going to the All-Star game in San Diego. To try to stay on the good side of fans, the White House had the stadium announcer give the president second billing to a baseball legend. It went like this. Ladies and gentlemen, Ted Williams, accompanied by his good friend, George Bush. That's the way the announcement went out. It didn't help. The stadium crowd of 50,000 still erupted into boos for Bush, who at the time was running for re-election. So why did 50 million people vote for his half-witted son? Now, last year, the Bush crime family tried a different ruse, and it worked. It worked. Invited to throw the first pitch at the 2006 Reds-Cubs opener in Cincinnati, Bush walked to the mound with two wounded veterans of the wars in Iraq and Afghanistan. Remember that? He was also escorted by John Pruszynski, whose son Tyler was killed in action in Afghanistan the preceding year. Cheers and applause drowned out the boos. Cowardly son of a bitch. I hate cowards. I hate liars, cheats, and sneaks, and cowards. But it can also be said, of course, that baseball has been very good to George Bush as a co-owner of the Texas Rangers. Co-owner. He parlayed a $600,000 investment into a $15 million windfall. There's always been somebody around to catch George Bush's delicate white ass when he falls, huh? Oh, my God.
Do you suppose Bush even goes to the shower without a couple of wounded warriors escorting him?
I doubt it.
I think they're just a permanent background. Hey, give me a couple of them fellas. You know, wherever he goes, and they're just at the ready.
I know. It's so miserable. For Christians getting ready to celebrate the risen Savior next Sunday, a planned Holy Week exhibition of a nude, anatomically correct chocolate sculpture of the Messiah was canceled last Friday after complaints from Catholics, including New York Cardinal Richard Egan. The display was called My Sweet Lord. It was shut down by the hotel that houses the Lab Gallery in Manhattan. According to Matt Semler, the gallery's creative director, Semler said he resigned after the Roger Smith Hotel shut down the show, My Sweet Lord. The artwork was created from more than 200 pounds of milk chocolate and features Christ with his arms outstretched as if on an invisible cross. The artwork does not include a loincloth. The 6-foot sculpture was the victim of what Sembler calls a strong-arming from people who haven't seen the show, haven't seen what we're doing. They jumped to conclusions completely contrary to our intentions. However, word of the so-called confectionery Christ infuriated Catholics, including Cardinal Egan, who described it as a sickening display. Bill O'Donohue, the head of the Watchdog Catholic League, said it was one of the worst assaults on Christian sensibilities ever. Really? It right up there with what, Bill? The Crusades? Inquisition? How about the witch trials in Europe and the New World? I know, right up to the Holocaust, which was engineered by Christians, huh? It's right up there, one of the worst assaults on Christian sensibilities ever. Okay. Semler, the art director, said the calls, he canceled after a lot of calls, and the calls included death threats over the work of the artist. The sculpture was to debut tonight. And just 4 days, 4 days before Roman Catholics marked the crucifixion of Christ on Good Friday. And Protestants, they do too. One of the worst assaults on Christian sensibilities ever. A chocolate Jesus. Well, all right.
As Homer Simpson would say, sacrilicious.
We'll be back after the break. Stay with us.
Ball game.
sing along. Go ahead.
I really want to know you. I really want to go with you. I really want to show you love.
Well, my sweet Lord, display was shut down in the Lab Gallery in Manhattan. No, my sweet Lord, there. Oh, God, I love that music. Can we run a tape show? Can we run a... And let's just kick back, drink some wine, smoke one, and...
I need some chocolate.
And listen to My Sweet Lord. Now, the Catholics didn't like that. Or the Christians didn't like that one when it came out either, because... It had Hare Krishna along with Hallelujah, and somehow that was, John emails to let me know that Gonzalez was at Yankee Stadium today to throw out the First Amendment. Even though Bush, oh, never mind, either you get it or you don't. Atheists are warning that a proposed U.S. ban on defaming, quote-unquote, religion is a threat to free speech and church-state separation. Apparently, a measure passed the U.N. Human Rights Council, the measure passed 24-14. It called upon governments to, quote, take resolute action to prohibit the dissemination, including through political institutions and organizations, of racist and xenophobic ideas and material aimed at any religion. The resolution also asks that states should encourage tolerance and respect for religion and report on acts of violence or discrimination against religious populations. Ellen Johnson, who's the president of American Atheists, says, quote, this proposal amounts to an international blasphemy statute and punishes those exercising a right to question and criticize religious superstition. She went on to say, one of the problems here is that religion and religious believers are being singled out for special treatment. Atheists aren't mentioned. And we have plenty of cases where inappropriate and aggressive religious proselytizing, even physical coercion, is being allowed in schools, the workplace, and in government. She went on to say that the resolution was vague and overly broad, and that criticizing or even questioning religious creeds is seen by many as a form of defamation. Wow, man. Everybody's getting so uptight, right? Everybody... People are so tight when they walk, they squeak. Have you noticed that? The latest Newsweek poll, it is Easter week, that's why I'm doing this. The latest Newsweek poll included a variety of interesting questions about Americans and religious matters, including the not surprising fact that 91% of the public say they believe in God. 91%. And almost as many, 87%, say they identify with a specific religion. But more, perhaps more importantly, Newsweek also asked poll respondents about modern biology. And this is the frightening part. Nearly half, 48% of the public, rejects the scientific theory of evolution. I thought it was higher than that, frankly. Half the American public rejects the scientific theory of evolution. One-third of college graduates say they accept the biblical account of creation as fact. How do you do that? How do you graduate from college believing that the earth is 6,000 years old and a talking snake got all funky with the first woman and made her eat an apple and Cain slew Abel and Cain was banished to the land of Nod, which is east of Eden, and there he knew his wife. What the hell is going on? And that's seen as fact.
Three words. Oral Roberts University. That's how you believe it.
Oh, I thought you were going to say something else. 73% of evangelical Protestants say they believe that God created humans in their present form within the last 10,000 years. Whew. Of the 34 countries involved in this poll, the United States ranked 33rd. These poll results come just a few months after an international study was conducted to measure which countries were the most accepting on evolutionary biology. Of the 34 countries involved, the United States ranked 33rd. Only Turkey ranked lower. As long as I got my plastic Jesus riding on the dashboard of my car. Careful, we might be breaking a law here. Through my trials and tribulations, and my travels through the nations, with my plastic Jesus, I'll go far. Riding down the thoroughfare. Oh, hey, by the way, if you're in Phoenix or the Phoenix area on April 15th, come on by for the Big Nova M birthday bash. Ow! You can meet, let's see who's going to be there, some really big names, Jeff Farias, Bill Press, Stephanie Miller, Tom Hartman, the professor Marianne Gilligan, the skipper. Am I going? Oh, really? We got a ticket? Who do we get to pay for the? We got the ticket. Okay. Now, to get your ticket, I don't think anyone's going to pay for yours. Someone paid for mine. To get your ticket, go to NovaMRadio.com, or you can drop by the radio station between 9 and 5, 824 Washington Street in Phoenix. And I look forward to seeing you Sunday the 15th at 4 p.m. There's going to be live music, entertainment, drinks, birthday cake at Axis Radius in Scottsdale. And it goes on until 9 o'clock, which means that it's going to be dangerous in there, right? Hope to see you. Also, another message here. I got an email from Tim in Los Angeles. Mike, can you remind everyone the Mike Malloy Campfire chat at your board is open? This is how listeners can join in the fun. Go to MikeMalloy.com, click on the message board, click Politics Free for All, and then click the official Mike Malloy Campfire chat April 2nd. Go to MikeMalloy.com, click on the message board, click the Politics Free for All, and then click the official Mike Malloy Campfire chat, April 2nd, 2007. So, P.S. Reverend Ted Haggard is still a heterosexual. the Newt Gingrich thing, this guy only opens his mouth to change feet, I swear to God.
I wonder about Haggard after that chocolate Jesus, man. He may have had a relapse.
Former House Speaker Newt Gingrich equated bilingual education a couple of days ago, Saturday, with, quote, the language of living in a ghetto, end quote. You know, referring to Spanish. And he mocked requirements that ballots be printed in multiple languages. Yeah, well, okay. If you're an English only or an America firster or, you know, really believe that when people come to this country, they better by God learn the language. Of course, I can imagine Newt immigrating someplace, which he may have to someday. Wonder how long it would take him. I bet Newt Gingrich is one of those Americans who, when he travels overseas, no matter where he goes, he just bitches and whines and yells about, well, nothing's in English. Christ, I don't speak Croat. I don't speak Portuguese. And how many Chinese dialects are there? Why isn't it in English? He was speaking in front of a group of white Republicans, the National Federation of Republican Women. Oh, that just sends chills down my spine just saying that. The National Federation of Republican Women. Ow! And he said, quote, the American people believe English should be the official language of the government. Ah. We should replace bilingual education with immersion in English so people learn the common language of the country and they learn the language of prosperity, not the language of living in a ghetto, Gingrich said to cheers from the crowd of more than 100. The language of prosperity, English? Really? I had no idea. Peter Zamora, co-chair of the Washington-based Hispanic Education Coalition, which supports bilingual education, said, quote, the tone of his comments was very hateful. Spanish is spoken by many individuals who do not live in a ghetto. Yeah. I wonder if Gingrich was referring to Alberto Gonzalez when, you know, Gonzalez's second language, one presumes, is Spanish. Is that the language of the ghetto? Gingrich is, you know, he's, first of all, he's a serial adulterer. You know, what did he do? He dumped his first wife and he met his third wife while he was dating his second wife. Oh, just what a pig. What a right-wing, typical Republican oinker. Email here from Art, also known as White Bear. He writes, Dear Mike, thanks for all that you do. I don't get to listen to you often, but when I do, mostly I really appreciate and agree with your point of view. I do worry a little about you when you express hatred for the opposition. Hatred gives power to the hated. Hatred is also not good for your own spirit. It is something I have had to work on in my life, and so I created the Goofy Bastard Box. The Goofy Bastard Box. What you do is, instead of saying, God, I hate that bastard, you say, what a goofy bastard. Let's throw him in the box. Every time you have to speak of him or her, you recognize that he or she has climbed out of the box again and needs to be thrown back in. It's working pretty good for me. I offer it to you. It's not copyrighted or anything. Public domain stuff, don't you know? The Goofy Bastard Box. So instead of saying, I hate that bastard, say, what a goofy bastard, let's throw him in the box. One other thing. Why hasn't anybody called the O'Reilly Show the Fecal Factor? Oh, wait a minute. Wouldn't that go in your box? Again, thanks for the good work, Art. And speaking of boxes, the United States has dropped all pretense of politeness in its efforts to dissuade India from building a gas pipeline from Iran by way of Pakistan. U.S. Energy Secretary Samuel Bodman used no subtlety during a visit to India last week, according to the Associated Press, when he said India's pipeline plans are tantamount to New Delhi helping Iran to get the bomb. Bodman said, quote, we believe that Iran is seeking to develop nuclear weapons, and anything that will support that endeavor is something we oppose, end quote. And he was equally unsubtle in reminding the Indian government about the box it is in on this matter because of New Delhi's need for U.S. cooperation in developing India's nuclear industry. Oh, Christ, don't you love it? Bodman did say that the Iran pipeline and India's civilian nuclear deal with the U.S., quote, operate in separate areas, end quote. But the mere fact that he said it suggests it may not be true. Wait a second. I thought George just gave the Indians all of our nuclear secrets, didn't he? I thought he did and released them from the non-proliferation treaty and said, you go, guys. Do y'all have colored people here? You go, guys. And what do you make of McCain? McCain strolls through Baghdad Market accompanied by 100 soldiers, 3 Black Hawk helicopters, 2 Apache gunships. Most of this stuff was at thinkprogress.org or Raw Story or where else? It's all over. Senator John McCain strolled briefly through an open-air market in Baghdad today in an effort to prove that Americans are not getting the full picture of what's going on in Iraq. NBC's Nightly News provided further details about McCain's one-hour guided tour. He was accompanied by, quote, 100 American soldiers with 3 Black Hawk helicopters and 2 Apache gunships overhead. Still photographs provided by the military to NBC News showed McCain wearing a bulletproof vest. McCain recently claimed that there are, quote, neighborhoods in Baghdad where you and I could walk through those neighborhoods today, end quote. In a press conference after his little tour, McCain told a reporter that his visit to the market was proof that you could indeed walk freely in some areas of Baghdad. This son of a bitch is insane. I swear he is. Now, the little story about Michael Ware, the veteran CNN reporter heckling McCain and his puppy, Senator Graham from South Carolina, that was apparently on the Drudge story, is an utter lie. The way Drudge reported, during a live press conference in Baghdad, Senator McCain and Graham were heckled by CNN reporter Michael Ware. An official at the press conference called Ware's conduct, quote, outrageous, saying, quote, here you have two United States senators in Baghdad giving first-hand reports while Ware is laughing and mocking their comments. I've never witnessed such disrespect. This guy is an activist, not a reporter. Now, see, whenever the sentence comes out like that, you know it's all BS. But then Drudge adds, this is not the first time Michael Ware has taken issue with Senator McCain's comments about early progress in Iraq last week. After Senator McCain told Wolf Blitzer they need to catch up on the news coming out of Iraq, Michael Ware responded by saying, I don't know what part of Neverland Senator McCain is talking about when he says he can go strolling in Baghdad. All right, the whole thing is bull feathers. Absolutely untrue. From this is Media Matters. Last week, CNN's Michael Ware challenged John McCain's substantiated assertion that there were multiple neighborhoods in Baghdad where Americans could take a walk without any security at all. Ware, who is in Baghdad, explained that McCain was flat out wrong. That, of course, set Ware up for a typical Republican smear campaign from all the right-wingers, comfortably safe here in the U.S. Almost on cue, Republican activist Matt Drudge launched the first salvo, claiming that Ware went crazy at McCain's Baghdad press conference and that the CNN reporter actually heckled the good senator. Only problem? The video of the press conference, and they provide a link, shows Ware sitting quietly and politely the entire time. Whoops. Maybe in John McCain's mind, that is what happened. Ware, unlike many of his colleagues based in the U.S. who cower before the Republicans, fought back with facts and video. He kept the heat on McCain again this morning. You see, McCain is now claiming that the fact that his congressional delegation drove from the Baghdad airport to the Green Zone rather than flew is somehow evidence of how great things are now in Iraq. And then Ware explains how, yet again, McCain is living in Never Never Land. And I'll have that for you when you come back. But isn't that the way it works? See, this little whore, Matt Drudge, put something out there, according to sources, and then the right-wing insane machine picks it up and starts hammering it. And none of it's true.
And his hunger burns.
Little Gingrich music.
So he starts to roam the streets at night, and he learns how to steal, and he learns how to fight in the ghetto.
In the ghetto.
Then one night in desperation, the young man breaks away. He buys a gun, he steals a car, tries to run, but he don't get far. And
I looked overjoyed, but what did I see? Sir, U.S. Marine, I looked at you. I swam in your pools, lay under your palm trees. I looked in the eyes of the Indian who lay off the letter of bending step. I threw the range fighter over the hill. I saw the frontline boys popping their pills. Sink of the mess they find on that desert stage, and the bravery.
It's hard for me in the, you know, living in the this beautiful White House to give you an assessment, a first-hand assessment. I haven't been there. You have. I haven't.
Ten before the hour. Back to McCain. McCain obviously is, we've been saying this for over a year. He's really lost it. He's playing with a deck that has about 40 of the cards missing. And this attack on CNN correspondent Michael Ware, who there's another correspondent over there, Tom Aspel, who works for NBC. These are correspondents who have been over there constantly. It's a wonder that they haven't lost their minds yet, but at least they try to get the truth out. And of course, it's always the media's fault. See, where it concerns the truth about Iraq, it's the media's fault because they don't report the good stuff. Well, okay, McCain is over there reporting the good stuff, and Ware explains to Miles O'Brien, or was it the other O'Brien? Who's Miles O'Brien on in the Soledad O'Brien in the morning? On CNN this morning, O'Brien, I don't know which one, said CNN's Michael Ware is following the delegation's movements, that's the Republicans that are in Iraq, in Baghdad for us this morning. So here's Michael Ware. That's right. There is the Republican congressional delegation here in Iraq. Essentially, they're here to view the impact of the surge or the Baghdad security plan, and essentially to sell its merits, to say that to say that, yes, it is having an impact, and to take that message home to the American people, desperate to hear signs of progress. Unfortunately, they chose a very poor way of displaying those signs of change and the signs of progress. The fact that Senator McCain and a delegation can drive from the airport and walk around parts of Baghdad wrapped in a heavy security envelope is not new. Generals and American representatives have been doing such things throughout the war. Indeed, it's the old reinvented as new, and is in no way a sign of progress of the surge, which the senators should be talking about. Then Michael Ware calls McCain out on a lie that Ware somehow heckled him. Miles O'Brien, or Soledad O'Brien, says, "Let me ask you a question. There was a report that said you were heckling and you were laughing during the senator's press conference. Is that true?" Michael Ware: "Well, let's bear in mind that this is a report that was leaked by an unnamed official or some kind to a blog to somewhere on the Internet. No one is going to put their name forward. We certainly haven't heard McCain say anything about it, or any of his staff have come forward to say anything about it. I did not heckle the senator. Indeed, I didn't say a word. I didn't even ask a question. In fact, when I raised my hand to ask a question, the press conference abruptly ended. So what I would suggest is that anyone who has any queries about whether I heckled, watch the videotape of the press conference." And if you and a lot of you have seen that, it's out there now, the video of the news conference where supposedly did the heckling of McCain. And if you've seen it, you note that Ware doesn't even speak during the entire press conference. And in fact, when he tries to ask a question, the press conference is immediately closed. But all the little right wing half-wits on media who are corrupting and polluting and destroying anything decent about this country, certainly anything remotely resembling dialogue about this hideous war, they get out there and you know, thanks to their little whore, Matt Drudge, they get out there and start talking about, no offense to sex workers, and start talking about something that never occurred. But this happens all the time. And thinkprogress.org also has a video of NBC's Tom Aspel challenging McCain's so-called safe stroll through Baghdad, noting that with all the protection afforded McCain, including the 100 soldiers, three Black Hawk helicopters, and two Apache attack helicopters, quote, "even Paris Hilton could ride a bicycle in a bikini through Anbar province," end quote. So Aspel can probably expect the next right-wing attack. But you see, Aspel and Ware have been in a war zone for years now. They're not intimidated by these right-wing pissants back here in the United States. They face death every day. Drudge doesn't really scare them. But someone in the Republican delegation to Baghdad, whether it was McCain and his people or Bush administration flack, someone sent the word to attack Ware. So, you know, the dirty work, the scut work, cleaning the latrine always goes to Drudge. That's why he has that name. And he gets it started for so that Hannity and the rest of these piglets can pick it up and pretend like it's true. According to a source. According to a source who was there. That's how easy it works. And at that press conference, by the way, Lindsey Graham, Republican of South Carolina, said that... you know, his evidence of progress there is due to the fact that he was able to spend some time in the Bab al-Sharqi market, at which 88 people died in suicide bomber attacks on January 22nd. Graham said, "We went to the market and were just really warmly welcomed. I bought five rugs for $5. And people were engaging," end quote. Now, what McCain and Graham didn't mention, and CNN's Bob Franken noted today, was that the senator's press conference was, quote, "held in the very, very, very heavily secured green zone, the center city area of Baghdad. Additionally, the delegation was accompanied by heavily armed U.S. troops when they were not in the green zone, side of the U.S. embassy and Iraqi government. When they weren't there, they traveled in armored military vehicles under heavy guard." Oh, my God.
"Oh, I know everything's fine. I bought five rugs for $5. I can't wait to take them home to my wife. She's a nice Christian woman who lives over there in South Carolina."
When we come back, we're going to talk for a moment here about Andrea Mitchell kind of blew the whistle on these Republicans on Chris Matthews' NBC or MSNBC Sunday show. Did you hear about that? Stick around. We'll get your phone calls. I'm Mike Malloy. This is the Nova M Radio Network. Past the hour, a couple emails here quickly. Mike, this is regarding Newt Gingrich's comments about English only. Mike, Gingrich's complaint is not only foolish but out of date. Most schools in New York City and across the country, with maybe the exception of California, don't offer real bilingual classes. There are students who are dubbed English language learners, but they are mostly taught in English by people who don't speak other languages. Like everything else in our public schools, it doesn't really work. Every day our public schools lose more and more. Yeah, you know, foreign language, when I was in high school 1,000 years ago, it was an absolute requirement if you were tracked to for college prep, which I was. And that also, by the way, was kind of a scam. Back in the 50s, as we were all coming through elementary school, nobody knew who was being tracked. The school administrators made that decision. They need a certain number of worker bees, and they needed a certain number. The vast majority were to be worker bees. And then some of us were were scheduled to be leaders. Boy, did they make a mistake with me. But being tracked towards college prep, we had to have 4 years of foreign language in high school. Luckily, I chose 2 years of Latin and then 2 years of Spanish and wound up as president of my Spanish club. Oh, don't roll your eyes, Kathy. That's an important thing. I don't have an award-studded life. So, Sue writes, Lindsey Graham probably took the lovely rugs home to his mother. I don't think the good Christian senator from South Carolina has been able to find the right woman. There have been whispers about outing him for years. Oh, yeah? Oh, my goodness. Well, wouldn't that be interesting? Bill in Lakewood, California writes, Mike, how do people like Sludge get away with lying about the Ware-McCain non-incident? Why isn't he sued for libel or slanders? I think we listeners would like to know if you have an answer. Yeah, very simply, in order for the person about whom a statement is made to sue for libel, the false statement must be defamatory, meaning that it actually harms the reputation of the other person, as opposed to being merely insulting or offensive. Now, it gets rather sticky if you're a public figure, such as government officials or celebrities or well-known individuals, people involved in specific public controversies. They're required, if they feel they've been libeled or in print or slandered by written, slandered in a spoken word, libeled in a written word, if I feel that way, I've got to, I'm required to prove actual malice on the part of the person, say, you know, Malloy bites the heads off of dead chickens. You know, I've got to prove there's actual malice there. And malice is a legal term, which means the person who said that about me knew his statement was false or recklessly disregarded the truth. And that's how you get around it. You say, well, according to a source, that's how Drudge and the rest of these slime balls get around it. According to somebody who is there. Well, I got an email from a person whose name I can't reveal, and so that takes a piece of human waste like Drudge off the hook. And besides, you really have to try to prove malice when you're dealing with a public figure or a political figure. How do you suppose I get away with calling Bush a murderous son of a bitch on this program every night, a killer? How do you suppose I do that? Aside from the fact that he really is. You see? Now, Andrea Mitchell on the Chris Matthews show on Sunday, she revealed that General David Petraeus, who now has his 4 stars, I saw him on TV tonight, he's now general. You can call him general now, not lieutenant general, not major general, not brigadier, but now general, the top U.S. commander in Iraq, met, according to Andrea Mitchell, very recently with the Senate Republican caucus to discuss their strategy on Iraq legislation. Mitchell said, quote, Petraeus went to the Republican caucus and told them, I will have real progress to you by August. End quote. That's according to Andrea Mitchell on Chris Matthews' program on Sunday. The Republicans claim they told him that after August, they will end their support for the war. Huh? Andrea Mitchell said, quote, they have told him at a caucus meeting as very, very recently that if there isn't progress by August and real progress means not a day of violence and a day of sanity, that they will pull the plug. End quote. Stunningly, Mitchell said that, quote, moderate Republican, end quote, senators had told her that they believe the escalation would work, but they didn't believe the escalation would work, but voted for it anyway. Andrea Mitchell said they really are not in favor of the surge. They don't believe it's going to work, but they basically said the president has until August, until Labor Day. After that, doesn't work, they're running. And here's the transcript. I guess where did we lift this? Does this come from Atreus? Mitchell, I think the Republicans are going to crack. What I've been told from inside the moderate center of the Republican caucus is that the vote in favor of the president this week, it was against the president, but the Republicans holding for the president, was misleading. That they really are not in favor of the surge. They don't believe it's going to work. But they basically said the president has until August. After that, they're running. Mitchell went on to say they'll stick until September and then they'll leave, the Republicans. I believe very firmly that they're against what he is doing, but they feel that General Petraeus has persuaded them that for all intents and purposes, they can't vote a withdrawal before September. Gee, I mean, that was on MSNBC. That's an NBC clone. And it was Tweety Bird and Andrea Mitchell. NBC reporter Andrea Mitchell, whose husband is the former Fed chairman. Why is that not all over the news tonight? I watched ABC and NBC Nightly News tonight. I watched a little bit of Blitzer. I didn't see that. Did you see it? That the Republicans are saying you have until August? Well, wait a minute. Isn't that cut and run? Well, wait a minute. Isn't that abandoning the troops? Well, wait a minute. Isn't that defeat without honor? Isn't that some terrible... I mean, what? So it's the Democrats whom the media are just scrambling like so many eggs because the Democrats are trying to do it legally up front and out in the open. And these filthy, gosh darn Republicans... Gosh darn? Well, I'm thinking about the box. These filthy Republicans do it with the commander of Iraq forces locked up behind closed doors like the cowardly little rat bastards they are. Oh, my God. All right, now, Democrats.com breaks it down to summarize. The revelation at Democrats.com says, that would be our good friend Bob Furtick, the revelation is so stunning it needs to be broken out piece by piece. One, Republican senators met alone with General Petraeus. Is it common for commanders to meet separately with a congressional minority? Or is this just another example of the Republican Party putting raw partisan politics ahead of national security? Two, Republican senators micromanaged General Petraeus. Isn't this one of the absolute unbreakable Republican rules, practically handed down to Moses with the Ten Commandments, that politicians should never micromanage commanders? Three, Republican senators set a deadline for Iraq. How many times has the Bush crime family shrieked that a deadline guarantees the humiliating defeat of our forces and the victory to terrorists. Didn't Cheney just say that yesterday? Why do Republican senators hate America and love the terrorists then? Huh? What exactly do Republicans mean when they say they will pull the plug? The supplemental appropriation bills approved by Democrats in the House and the Senate both call for phased withdrawals over the next 12 to 18 months. Why would Senate Republicans support a Democratic plan, or would they offer a plan to leave Iraq even sooner? And five, given this Republican betrayal, why did Bush repeatedly attack Democrats in his radio address Saturday? Is he unaware that his fellow Republicans are planning to pull the plug on Iraq? These would be excellent questions for the next White House press corps to ask. Too much cappuccino Perino, don't you think?
I feel no obligation. They put their faith and trust in God and corporations. They stand for piety that doesn't suffer.
It's in the Gulf Coast countries' interests that there be a stable Iran. Iran that is capable of rejecting Iranian influence.
Yeah. Oh, my God. It just gets weirder and weirder. All right, one more time to summarize what Andrea Mitchell revealed on the Chris Matthews Show on Sunday. And Judy in Colorado says, Mike, not only did ABC, NBC, CBS not mention what Andrea Mitchell said to Chris Matthews on Sunday regarding the Republicans cutting and running, but even Chris Matthews didn't mention it today on his own show. What a farce. Yeah, doesn't that seem to you like it would be an absolute mind-scrambling, incredible scoop? The Republicans decide to cut and run. They've told Petraeus, you have till August, sucker. But no, it's the Democrats, you see, who are accused of micromanaging the war. It's Nancy Pelosi and Harry Reid, because they have decided that the American public's had enough. They're accused of micromanaging, and they don't go one-tenth as far as the Republicans go, locked up behind closed doors like the cowardly little rat bastards that they really are. My God. So, one more time to summarize it. And thanks to Bob Furtick at Democrats.com. First, Republican senators met alone with Petraeus. Is it common for commanders to meet separately with a congressional minority? Or is this just another example of Republicans putting raw partisan politics ahead of national security? Two, Republican senators are micromanaging General Petraeus. Isn't that one of the absolute unbreakable Republican rules, that politicians should never micromanage commanders? Three, Republican senators set a deadline for Iraq. How many times has the Bush crime family shrieked that a deadline guarantees the humiliating defeat of our forces and victory for the terrorists? Why, then, do Republican senators hate America and love the terrorists? Four, what exactly do Republicans mean when they say they're going to, quote, pull the plug, end quote? Five, given this Republican betrayal, why did Bush repeatedly attack Democrats in his weekly radio address? Is he unaware that his fellow Republicans are planning to pull the plug on Iraq? And that filthy android Cheney, was it today when he was out there again saying the same thing? That the Democrats in the Senate, in the House, are trying to micromanage the war in Iraq. And the lying son of a bitch, what are we to believe? He doesn't know what the Republicans are saying to General Petraeus? Please. Oh. I wonder if you find that on the Drudge Report. Huh? Was that on the Drudge Report? Developing. Andrea Mitchell, NBC correspondent, wife of the former Fed chairman, and Tweety Bird, sat there and revealed that Petraeus is meeting with Republicans, and the Republicans are saying, guess what, soldier boy? Get it won by August or we're out of here. We're pulling the plug. Hey, Hannity, did you talk about this on your program today? Hey, Pigman, can you hear me? Pigman, oh, never mind, he's deaf by choice, drug-addicted thug. Oh, man. Referring to McCain and... Who's the other senator from South Carolina who's I just quoted? Yeah, Graham. Bridget writes, "Hi, Mike. After shaking my head in disbelief at the survey numbers about the people who equate a talking snake and a thunderous father in the sky with science, it struck me that those numbers actually explain something else that I keep wondering about. I find myself almost daily wandering around like one of those cartoon characters who's been hit on the head by a falling anvil and sees stars as I listen to the absurdities spouted by the likes of McCain and the so-called news media that parrots those as well as pronouncements by the delusional administration. Hey, for people who believe in talking snakes, believing in a safe Baghdad is not such a big jump. I think the continued chosen ignorance and blindness of the populace of this country about the political realities of the thugs currently controlling the government is completely explained by the rise and dominance of so-called small-c Christians in this country. Mike, I hate these people. I hate them more than is healthy."
Open up the pearly gates. Well, ain't no time to wonder why. We're all going to die. Well, come on, brothers, throughout the land. Pack your boys up to Vietnam. Come on, folks, don't hesitate. Send them off before it's too late. Be the first one on your block to have your boy come home in a box. And it's 1, 2, 3, what are we fighting for? Don't ask me, I don't give a damn.
Don't go to bed angry. Let Mike Malloy do it for you on Nova M Radio.
Twenty-six before the hour. Karen writes it about General Petraeus. Is it General Petraeus or General Betrayus? Betray us, General Betray us. Betray. You people are too slick by a factor of 10. Former Secretary of State Henry Kissinger, who helped engineer the U.S. withdrawal from Vietnam. Let me stop for a second and laugh or cry about that phrase. This is from an Associated Press release. Who helped engineer the U.S. withdrawal from Vietnam. Kissinger did not do that. What Kissinger did was help prolong the death and destruction in Vietnam. Oh, well, history is written by the winners, right? Anyway, Kissinger said yesterday the problems in Iraq are more complex than that than Vietnam was, and military victory in Iraq is no longer possible. Kissinger said that to the Associated Press in Tokyo, where he received an honorary degree from Waseda University, a degree in what? Mass murder? Kissinger said that fighting in Iraq is likely to continue for years and that America's national interest requires an end to partisan bickering at home over war policy. Really? I just want to scream and stick my thumbs in my eye sockets and push when I see a sentence like that. Former Secretary of State Henry Kissinger, who helped engineer the U.S. withdrawal from Vietnam. Oh my God. Okay, so no less an expert on U.S. imperialism, murder, mass killing, mayhem, destruction of foreign countries, overthrow of foreign governments. Kissinger has had his bloody hands around the throats of just about every single wet operation of the CIA for the past 40 years. Kissinger is one of the most evil sons of bitches ever to walk the planet. He makes Donald Rumsfeld look like a Boy Scout. So Kissinger, the murderer, says, can't win in Iraq, okay? Now, how about this? From the Montreal Gazette in Canada, two Afghanistan experts have painted a sobering picture of the conditions in Afghanistan, arguing support among Afghans for NATO forces is plummeting, that the U.S.-driven policy of poppy eradication is wrongheaded, and the war might not be winnable. U.S. scholar Barnett Rubin and Gordon Smith, Canada's former ambassador to NATO, delivered their withering comments to a House of Commons committee only days after Canada's top military commander, General Rick Hillier, touted progress being made there. Hillier sounds like Rumsfeld. Hillier, the chief of defense staff, this week predicted Canadian troops in southern Afghanistan will soon see a rise in attacks from the Taliban, but he insisted on using the term surge rather than offensive. No, the Taliban, to the Taliban, Mr. Hillier, it is an offensive. Like Tet offensive? I don't think the North Vietnamese or the Viet Cong referred to what they did in April of 1968 as a surge. It was called an offensive, and it worked. Mr. Hillier, the chief of defense staff in Canada, also noted that many Afghans are moving back into their homes in districts west of Kandahar following a Canadian-led NATO offensive last fall. But Mr. Rubin, Barnett Rubin, who has been to Afghanistan 29 times over more than two decades, said yesterday many Afghans are growing frustrated with the pace of Western efforts to stabilize their country. He says, quote, they are not happy. Support for both the international presence and the government has plummeted. Rubin recently published an article in Foreign Affairs magazine warning Afghanistan, quote, is at risk of collapsing into chaos, end quote. In this article, he blasts the United States for underestimating the influence of Pakistan, which he accuses of providing safe haven to the Taliban. Both Rubin and Smith suggested Canada needs to have a new debate about its role in Afghanistan. Well, yeah, if the Canadians don't want to see more of their young men murdered by American troops or killed in an offensive by Afghan troops, might be time to leave, huh? So, experts all over the place, even a murderous criminal expert like Kissinger, is either predicting or declaring defeat is at hand in both Afghanistan and Iraq. Nice, huh? How does that feel? In Vietnam, we just lost one war, and nothing really bad happened. As a matter of fact, we are now setting up factories in Vietnam so that we can exploit more third world labor, so that you and I can wear more designer clothes or whatever the hell it is that we wear. I wear Levi's, but maybe you don't. I don't know. And now it's two at a time, Iraq and Afghanistan. Utter, absolute failures. Well, gee, isn't that a surprise? To have invaded Afghanistan after the attack on this country, if you believe the official version of what really happened, and I do not, but let's pretend, to have invaded Afghanistan the way we invaded Afghanistan, and by the way, the decision to invade Afghanistan was made long before the attack on this country on September 11th, or the attack in this country on September 11, 2001. The decision to invade Afghanistan was made in Texas when groups of the Taliban, who are still in power, the leadership was invited to this country by UNICAL and by oil men in Texas who made it very clear to them, we're going to build a pipeline across Afghanistan to get all that Caspian Sea natural gas from the stands north of you across your country and into the Arabian Sea. I guess it's the Arabian Sea, so that we can all get richer than we already are. We want to build the pipeline. We want you to protect it. The Taliban said no. And the Americans said, well, then we will bomb the living Christ out of you, so to speak. The living Muhammad out of you. And then, wonder of wonders, approximately 3,000 people were murdered in American soil, and we know the official story and the subsequent invasion of Afghanistan. What, if the official story was true, what was required, and I think anyone with the sense of a gently stewed rhubarb stalk understands this, what was needed was a police action. If there really were 19 people, 15 of whom came from Saudi Arabia, came to this country and committed that kind of mass death, then that was a police action. Or bomb Saudi Arabia. Huh? No, 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 no. Let's invade Afghanistan. So now we have three experts, and I don't think there is any more of an expert on blood and gore and death and triangulation and destruction and overthrowing governments than Henry Kissinger. And they're all saying the same thing. It's over. It's over. Even the Republicans are meeting secretly with General David Petraeus and telling him it's over. Oh, God. All right. Let's do some phone calls here. We're at 800-989-1480. Please stay on topic. I've tossed out about 8 or 9 different things tonight. Let's not go off on subjects that we haven't even brought up. That drives me crazy, okay? It just makes your humble and obedient servant here start pulling what few remaining hairs I have left out of my head. So just stay on topic, all right? We really appreciate it when you do that. Let's start with Juliet, who's calling from Arizona. Hey, Juliet.
Oh, hi, Mike. I love your show.
Thank you.
I would like to ask Mr. Gingrich, if English is the language of prosperity, how come we have millions of poor people in this country that speak English, and then we had millions of people come from Ireland across the ocean who spoke English, and they were poor also? It's not the language of prosperity.
Well, not to a rational human being, but to Newt Gingrich. I think what you're doing is making the mistake I make sometimes, Juliet, and that is assuming that Newt Gingrich is a rational human being, and he's not. He's another one of these right wing ideologues who really does think that he is. I don't think he considers himself to be Caesar. I think he considers himself to be Cassius or Brutus, or somebody in the inner circle, someone in the Senate, perhaps the ancient Roman Senate, who had the power to change Roman history. I think Gingrich sees himself as having the power to change American history, and he really is a washed out, second-rate college economics professor. That's all he is. Of course, Hitler was a house painter, so go figure.
Well, he tried to say on Hannity and Combs tonight, he meant ghetto. He meant Jewish people. He didn't need Spanish-speaking people.
He meant Jewish?
I mean, he's trying to weasel out of it, and he keeps putting both feet in his mouth, not one foot.
It just gets worse. Now, somebody, AIPAC, will send him a telegram or an email. Telegram? An email that says, what did you mean by Jewish people? And he'll say, no. What I meant was Italians. You know, and then the Italian embassy or Rome, the Catholic Church, will send him an email and say, what do you mean Italian? He'll say, no, I meant Russians. And then they'll come over here, and all of a sudden he'll start to die from radiation poisoning. Hey, thanks, Juliet. I appreciate you checking in.
Okay, well, I hope we lead your Molly and the future generations a more peaceful world.
Yeah, I hope that works that way, too. Thanks,
and
Juliet.
And I'll keep you in my prayers.
Okay. That's cool. All right,
okay, you take care.
You, too. We'll be back after the break. I'm Mike Malloy.
Don't wanna live.
faster than a flying monkey, more powerful than a special prosecutor. It's Mike Malloy on Nova M Radio.
Senses real, fatal attraction is holding me fast. How can I escape its irresistible grasp? Can't keep my eyes from the circling sky.
It's about 9 before the hour. Back to your phone calls here on the Nova M Radio Network. Alex is calling from Scottsdale, Arizona. Alex, welcome to the program.
Good afternoon. Good evening.
Hey.
I almost sound like that radio movie guy that was did that
you,
movie.
You sound just like him.
Yeah, there we go. My point was, when I was on Monday, I didn't get to say what I had to say about Mayor Bill.
Bill Maher, yeah, okay.
Yeah, Bill Maher. He was talking about the Iraq debacle, you know, how we've got surge.
Right.
And he brought up the fact that, you know, when your dad was drunk and the cops were on the porch, that it stopped.
Right.
But as soon as the cops left, you know, he was beating mom again.
That's right, yeah.
And I think that that was one of the most simplistic explanations of what's going on over there.
I guess that's sort of an analogy, or in Mars case, it might have been a metaphor, works. But all we have to do, and not you and me, but people in the military, is take a look at what happened in the war in Southeast Asia. Every time the United States military, when we were fighting in Vietnam, every time we got hold of a village and then left it, the Viet Cong or the NVA would come back in and retake it. And this went on and on and on until finally, after 9 years of this, American soldiers started to go insane and started fragging. That is killing their own commanders.
I didn't mean to interrupt you, Mike, but you have to remember, when they came back in the villages, anybody that received help or got inoculations got their arms chopped off.
Right. It was just insane. So for guys like you and me to listen to Bill Maher use an analogy that really doesn't quite make it is kind of silly, when all we have to do, not you and me, but the United States military, take a look at what happened. Look at what happened to the French in Algeria. Look what happened to the French in Vietnam. Look what happened to the United States in Vietnam. What the hell do these people need? It's been said that the military always fights the last war. And if that's the case here, we were condemned and doomed to defeat on day one of Bush's invasion. And I think it's become very clear that that's exactly the case.
My father was a Polish immigrant, and he was working in a plastics factory back east. And he spoke very little English, and there was a French guy, and he came over with a lot of money in his pocket. He goes, "I just left Vietnam." This was 1956.
Right.
And he says, "You see that guy over there? He's dead. You see the three guys over there? They're dead. You see those five guys? They're all dead. And those three guys, they're going to come back with no legs and arms."
Yeah.
And he goes, "What in the Sam heck are you talking about?" And he goes, "Well, there's going to be a war in Vietnam, and if you don't join the military with your Polish butt, you're going to be drafted."
Yeah.
And he joined, and, you know, he became what he became and, you know, did his thing and whatnot. But he told any of us, if we ever joined, that he would disown us.
And rightly so. The United States military has been misused since the end of World War II, and certainly misused prior to that. You know, it's been said that World War II, the last great war, the war that made sense. Some people argue that way. Some people say, no, that's bat squeeze, too. But certainly since 1946, the United States military has been used time and time and time again to further. And you don't have to be a rocket scientist to see this. Nobody does. To further the aims of absolute, pure, unrestrained capitalism. That's all, in the same manner that the armed forces of the Soviet Union for 50 years were used strictly to advance the theories of communism, a perverted form of socialism. So,
what they had in Poland was they had a small amount of gun control just before the invasion of Germany. So there was people out there with picks and forks, and a lot of people don't bring up the fact there were almost 9 to 10 million Poles were killed, and that wasn't including the Jewish people.
Right. Yeah, well.
And, you know, getting about Polish immigrants, my father didn't become a U.S. citizen until later, after he had been with the military, out of the military, and he finally got his citizenship. And to not get off the immigration thing, but and not get too straightforward, but we've got some vigilantes down here in Arizona that when the immigrants are coming across and trying to fight their way to find a better life, sneaking through the desert, we've got guys taking pot shots at them, and they're killing them.
Yeah.
Dead. And the other thing that they left out, Mike, was the fact that some of these low-life coyotes, as they call them,
right.
And they have young girls that are traveling with them coming because they want to bring their whole family, and the young girls disappear, and they're sold to these pedophiles.
I wouldn't be surprised.
And the only reason I know about this is just because I have friends in the Mexican community and relatives, and they told me about this, and I was so utterly dismayed.
Mm-hmm.
They said, you know, there's harsh realities going on here, and people are being killed. And nobody has so many clues how many people are being died up in the desert trying to come here and change their life. And the cooperation between our government and what was going on in Calderon and all this, anybody's going to change something like Fox was going to change something. And Ross Perot said, well, you'll hear the sucking sound when the jobs start leaving. Well, there aren't even enough jobs for them people down there.
Yeah.
I mean, it's just ludicrous.
Well, I hear you, and thanks a lot for checking in tonight. I appreciate
The last thing I want to leave you, Mike, you say you wear Levi's. I was joking with Jeff Darius today that, you know, this should be a black tie event on the birthday. And he says, I don't know if there was a dress code. And I said, I don't know. I'll ask Mike when I talk to him.
That's all I have are jeans and cheap sport coats. I got to go. Thanks, Alex.
Take care.
Thanks for checking in. As far as, you know, shooting immigrants coming across the border, yeah. You know, here in the South, they lynched Leo Frank because he happened to be a Jew. Sacco and Vanzetti were executed because they happened to be Italian. How many Irishers were beat into bloody pulps? What about the Chinese? You know, I mean, so it's not just the Latinos or Mexicans coming across the border that are being taken shots at. Maybe that's the way it is now. But, you know, Leo Frank here in Atlanta was, well, Marietta, Georgia, was pulled out of a jail and lynched because of the death of little Mary Fagan and because Leo Frank happened to be a Jew. We'll be back after the break. I'm Mike Malloy. Welcome back. It's about 7 past the hour. Now things are getting weird. I've been getting a couple of emails here. All right, let me start with this one. This is about Andrea Mitchell and her comments on Sunday's Chris Matthews program. Jeff in Washington State writes, in my opinion, whether or not Andrea Mitchell has information of a clandestine nature, by August or September, the exclusive subject of Iraq will most likely be irrelevant. It's all predestined, and within 4 or 5 months, matters will have evolved further into that evil void. The whole situation and the ones directly involved and the people directly involved reek of mass quantities of dinosaur dung. Not enough of us care, and denials won't solve our downward plunge. All right. Now this comes from Think Progress. Salon.com's Joan Walsh highlights a strange moment on tonight's Hardball. And here's what it is. Without mentioning what had been discussed on Sunday, Chris Matthews asked Andrea Mitchell, rather out of the blue, to talk about what Petraeus was telling senators. Mitchell replied, quote, it's a good thing you bring that up, end quote. And she went on to say that Petraeus recently held a closed-circuit briefing for senators of both parties, quote, Democrats as well as Republicans, end quote. But Mitchell also repeated her claim from Sunday that, quote, moderate Republican senators were privately saying they opposed Bush's so-called troop surge but would publicly support it out of respect for Petraeus until the summer. So, first of all, what a clunky, chunky segue. Doesn't that sound like, it sounds like Andre Mitchell called Chris Matthews this morning and said, oh, Jesus, God, you got to get me back on your program. I got it wrong, or this is not the plan, or I've got to change what I said. So, Chris Matthews brings it up tonight out of the blue. Hey, what's Petraeus telling senators? And Mitchell replied, oh, it's a good thing you bring that up. Oh, my God. I don't know anymore, and sometimes I really don't care. And the only reason I do care is because this war is the reason that our Constitution is being destroyed, and we're now a torture-sanctioning country. And Bush and his thugs remain in power, and people elected Republicans because of this war, because so many people actually believe the lies and the crap that was just flowing out of the White House like a backed-up toilet. So that's the only reason I care. I really don't give a tinker's damn what Andrea Mitchell knows or doesn't know, or what Tweety Bird knows or doesn't know, or what is published at Drudge's toilet site, or any of it. Don't you feel that way? Don't you just want to wash your hands of this and say, all you goddamn people, just leave me alone? Don't you? Well, you may not use the bad word there, but, you know, it's maddening. It's just absolutely maddening. Talk, 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 talk. And this madness just continues. It just continues. Afghanistan is going right down the commode. So is Iraq's already gone. Just waiting for someone to pull the chain. Iran, God only knows what's going to happen in Iran. Bush is enough of a psychopath that he may just be talked into launching an attack against Iran. When's the targeted date now? April 6th? When is that? This week? Good Friday? Woo! I'm tired of it. And I know you are too. I mean, I'm nobody. I'm just tired of it. Just like you are. You and I, we're nobodies. We really aren't. We really aren't. We're nobody. But this crap that is being done by somebody, you see, not us, but by somebody, is affecting us nobodies. What do you want? I know what I want. I just want to be left the hell alone. I want my head to be clear. I want to enjoy my grandchildren and my almost 3-year-old daughter and my spouse and hang out and you know, drink some beer with my friends and plant some tomatoes and go for walks, go to the beach once in a while. Isn't that what you want, right? And have a job, pay the bills. Yeah, got to pay the bills. And have at least a partial belief that when I'm dead, my kids will be okay, unless they screw up and walk in front of a car and get run over or do something really stupid like join the U.S. military and get murdered someplace. Huh? Isn't that what you want? That's all. Just very simple things. Very simple things. That's all. Simple things. I want Kathy to stop being the producer of this program and go back to doing nursing. Finish up. She hadn't got her degree yet. Finish up. And then let's move to Ghana. They just celebrated their independence, didn't they? Let's go to Ghana. That's supposed to be a great country. And let's go there. And, you open up a clinic, Kathy, and I'll grow okra. All right. Back to your phone calls at 12 past the hour here. I'm sorry. I just get crazy. Sanchez is calling from Montbello, California. By the way, Sanchez, how's Kiki?
My homegirl.
Yeah, your homegirl.
Hey, Kiki! What's up? What's up?
Hey, Kiki be kicking back right now in her crib.
Oh, is she really? Is she listening to the program?
Yeah, Kiki chills by the computer, man. She be chilling.
Well, that's great. Well, that's great. Hello to Kiki. Kiki, how you doing? What's up? Everything is okay. Your man Sanchez calls in just often enough so we can keep him straight. Now, what do you call in about?
Well, I was calling about McCain, but I really feel compelled to ask you this question because my my spidey senses are going up because you mentioned the Republicans threatening to pull the plug on the budget. Okay, now what's to say after they do that that Chucklenut still continues this all? What makes you so sure that that stops it?
Because then he loses, Bush loses his enablers. The only reason he's gone as far as he's gone with the Iraq War is because these halfwits in the House and the Senate, these Republicans, have allowed him to. Regardless of what Bush thinks about the Constitution, the Republicans, as a majority party for the past 12 years, had the power to stop this son of a bitch any time they wanted to stop him. They could have stopped him 5 years ago. They could have stopped him before the invasion ever took place. The Democrats had a chance to stop him too back in 2003 when the Democrats, I think, still held the Senate. So if the Republicans, the Democrats are on the record, they're saying no, it's going to end. If the Republicans jump on the record too, then all of a sudden, a wonder of wonders, the power of the purse reverts back to where it belongs in to the legislative branch of government. And if you don't have any money, you can't go kill people because it costs money to buy bombs and bullets and Apache helicopters and gunships and all that crap. So. So I don't know. Bush will not be able to continue if there's no money. He can scream all he wants, but once the Republicans turn against him, it's over. It's all over. Put a fork in him. It's done.
I'm praying. I'm not as confident about you about that, but I mean, you know, there's a lot of money still in the pipeline, militarily speaking, that Bush could draw from in order to continue. That's the only reason why my spidey senses are going off about that, because otherwise I'd be in that corner.
Well, he could. No. He could for a while, sure. Yeah. But you know, this war costs. Well, what's the cost? A billion a month? $10 billion a month? I don't even know anymore. I just know the son of a bitch keeps coming back to these cowards in Congress asking for another $50 billion, $70 billion, $110 billion.
Yeah.
So I don't even know what it costs. Nobody knows what it costs, but it appears to be costing billions of dollars a month. So there's money in the pipeline. How long? How big is the pipeline? You see, how thick is it? How many billions are in there? And how quick before the defense contractors in this country, the military-industrial complex, says, "Yo, wait a minute, where's the money if you want these?"
This is where I'm tying into exactly the point that I wanted to make about John McCain's visit this past weekend. Did you notice how it was so carefully orchestrated and timed right after the Congress voted for the supplemental budget? Did you notice how it involved all of the Black Hawk helicopters and the support in order to get him to walk through that market and to have that photo opportunity? But did you notice the timing, what weekend it happened? And so much of the billions for this budget are going to be going to the Blackwaters and the Kellogg Brown and Roots and the Cockies and the Halliburtons. This is everybody talks about the visit there, especially with Lindsey Graham. Oh my God. But nobody wants to say, like, hey, that's one of the reasons why, because if they would have had McCain in there and a bomb would have gone off, that would have gone towards the credibility of the supplemental budget and the mercenaries and all of that. And they don't even talk about this other point, that six more soldiers outside of McCain's little shelter bubble were killed outside.
Were killed.
You know, he's got zero credibility, as far as I'm concerned. I used to like the man, you know, but he's had so many packages of Kool-Aid at this point that, you know, you can't believe anything from that man. And this weekend was just another example of it. So that's how I wanted to tie the two things together, because, I mean, if they don't have, if Halliburton or any of these people don't have the support, will they pull out? I mean, is this possible?
Mm-hmm.
You know? That's
well,
my...
that's a good question, and I don't know. It depends on how Cheney and Bush and Petraeus really see their roles in the U.S. government. If they see themselves as dictators, it's over. So
yeah.
I don't know. All right, Sanchez.
More George Harrison.
I got to go.
Bye.
Be nice to Kiki. Take care. Take care. All right. Oh my God. But I know you're tired of it, too. I know you are. We all are. We're just tired of it. I can't think, except in the Vietnam era, when I've ever felt so exhausted. And I was, you know, 40 years younger then, 38 years, 35 years younger then. And it was exhausting. Right? You know what I'm talking about. We'll be back after the break.
Well, this is evident, yeah. In the American way, you must give and I shall take. I will tell you what is moral and what's just. Because I want, because I will, because I can.
It's okay, Republicans. The pain will be over soon. Take a deep breath. Find your happy place. It's more of Mike Malloy.
Past the hour. I've got to mention this because I mini-blogged about it today, and a good way to do it, a couple of letters from two women in San Francisco, independent of each other. First one's from Kay in San Francisco. She writes, Dear Mike, on Friday's program, you took a call from a flying monkey who displayed the appalling ignorance that defines the 30% of the American population that still supports the Bush crime family. As outrageous as his statements about an all-volunteer military were, I find myself even more outraged at the mealy-mouthed Matthew Dowd-like converts who seem to be sprouting up all over the place these days. This is the guy that had his mea culpa in the New York Times today. I've talked a lot to these types over the past 6 years. They spent the first 5 3/4 years telling me that Bush was the great protector of America, that the war in Iraq was fair payback for 9/11, that those who didn't support Bush and his war were, quote, goddamn San Francisco liberals, unquote. Even after the facts were clear for anyone with basic reading ability, these folks continued to parrot Limbaugh and company's lies. I even had one of them tell me that it didn't matter if Iraq wasn't responsible for 9/11 because, after all, those Arabs are all the same, and that's why George Bush is going after them. These Johnny-come-latelys have enabled this pack of criminals to destroy our democracy at home while creating even more terrorism abroad. Now that they are coming out of the ether, like Matthew Dowd, they expect us to do what? Congratulate them? Thank them? No way. F them. Kay in San Francisco. You go, Kay. And then Beth in San Francisco writes, Dear Mike, just got done reading the Matt Dowd piece in the New York Times, and one word sears brightly into my mind. Coward. It's taken this jackass 7 years to break up with George. In 2004, he begins to have doubts. He writes but does not publish his Kerry Was Right op-ed piece. And even when he finally decides that this Iraq war is wrong, he doesn't have the guts to stand up for his own epiphany, even when his own son is deploying. What? He wrote, quote, when you fall in love like that and then you notice some things that don't exactly go the way you thought, what do? Like in a relationship, you say, no, 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 it'll be different, end quote. I had to read that quote about 3 times, Mike. Matt Dowd sounded more like an abused spouse than a former aide. Who are these Bush administration cronies, and why are they all so cowardly? Whether it's the small-voiced boy men or the man-girl bachelorettes, each of them seem to be trained to be void of integrity, competency, individuality, and courage. I can't imagine living a life like that. Beth in San Francisco, and what they're both referring to is what I mini-blogged about today at our website. Matthew Dowd, a top strategist for Bush, who has had his heart broken. Oh, he's out of love with George, the first member of Bush's inner circle to break so publicly with him. Oh, George, I loved you. You broke my heart. Did you read that? New York Times, nytimes.com, Matthew Dowd. Check it out.
Breaks my heart more sorrow.
The best way to defeat the totalitarian of hate is with an ideology of hope, an ideology of hate.
Oh, sit down and shut up. The Matthew Dowd story is just, I don't know, it affected me the same way sitting in a classroom and somebody drags their fingers across a chalkboard affects me. Matthew Dowd, who was part of the inner circle of Bush's thugs, killers, and advisors, has said that his faith in Mr. Bush was misplaced. He criticized Bush as failing to call the nation to a shared sense of sacrifice. He said he believed the president had not moved aggressively enough to hold anyone accountable for the abuses at Abu Ghraib. That Mr. Bush still approaches governing with a my way or the highway mentality. He said his decision to step forward and declare himself free at last, thank God Almighty I'm free at last, had not come easily. He said his disappointment in Mr. Bush's presidency is so great that he feels a sense of duty to go public, given his role in helping Mr. Bush gain and keep power. I'll tell you what, Matthew. Go drink the hemlock. There's no way some little candy-ass public apology on your part is going to matter worth a damn. What's it going to do, pal? Bring back 3,300 dead Americans? 600,000 dead Iraqis? You punk! So now your son is going to Iraq. Oh, my goodness. And you were part of that team that said Senator John Kerry was a flip-flopper who could not be trusted with national security during wartime. And you say you had even written but never submitted an op-ed article titled Kerry Was Right. What's the matter, Matthew? We don't want your stinking apology. Drink the hemlock. Drink it. New York Times says Mr. Dowd's journey from true believer to critic in some ways tracks the public arc of Mr. Bush's political fortunes. I'd like to ask Mr. Dowd if George Bush had a 64% approval rating now, which is what Bill Clinton had when these little termites in the Republican Party were impeaching him. If Mr. Bush were to have a 64% approval rating, Mr. Dowd, would you be making your attempt at your phony-ass mea culpas? Would you? Huh? Or does it have to do with your son? Dana Perino. What's her nickname? Too Much Cappuccino Perino, Matthew, says that you just have your ass in a sling because your son is going off to fight George's war, and all of a sudden it's hit you right between the eyes that what your son is going off to probably get killed about or come back missing a limb has nothing to do with reality, and it's a policy that you, Matthew, sold to the American public. So now you come out in the New York Times. Huh? I understand the Bush crime family is really pissed. Hey, Matthew, there's only one way for you to expiate your guilt. Drink the hemlock! Drink it! Mr. Dowd has gradually broken his ties with the Bush camp, the Times says. One of Mr. Dowd's premature twin daughters died. He was divorced, and he watched his oldest son prepare for deployment to Iraq. As an Army intelligence specialist fluent in Arabic. Mr. Dowd says he had become so disillusioned with the war that he had considered joining street demonstrations against it. Well, why didn't you? Well, because his continued personal affection for the president had kept him from joining those protests. Your personal affection for a mass killer, a liar, a skunk, a son of a bitch, a fraud, a cheater, a coward, a sneak. Your personal affection. Drink the hemlock, Matthew! Mr. Dowd said he hoped in part that by coming forward, he would be able to get a message through to a presidential inner sanctum that he views as increasingly isolated. Dan Bartlett, the White House counselor, said Matthew Dowd's criticism is reflective of the national debate over the war. Mr. Bartlett said, "It's an issue that divides people. Even people that supported the president aren't immune from having their own feelings and emotions." Oh, my God. Matthew, you are responsible for so much death, so much destruction. Be careful, Matthew. If you are a believer, if you believe religious mythology, whether it be Christian or a Buddhist or I don't know, maybe just a belief in karma, watch out. Your son is going over there. Watch out. Be careful. Because if you think your heart is broken now, wait till you get a call that says your son is dead, based on a policy that you helped formulate. Wow. So Matthew Dowd, who's next? Who's next? Condoleezza Rice? Is she going to come forward? Is she going to step out and say, guess what? I've been working for a mass killer who's a lying son of a bitch. Well, there he is, all over the New York Times today. You can still get the article, nytimes.com, Matthew Dowd, and read about this whiny little freak who was instrumental in bringing to power a man who has destroyed constitutional law in this country, who has destroyed the executive branch and turned it into a dictatorship, who has destroyed the legislative branch, who has assisted and continued to pack the judicial branch with neo-fascists, and now Matthew Dowd says he's fallen out of love. He's fallen out of love. Aside from the homoerotic aspect of that, what do you mean you've fallen out of love? Why? Because your son is going off to fight Bush's war? What happened, Matthew? Did that finally slam you between the eyes? Couple of people I'd like you to meet. Let's start with Cindy Sheehan. You may want to talk to her at some point. Matthew, no, I'm not a forgiving individual, as you probably know. When somebody does this much damage, let them boil in oil. Drink the hemlock, Matthew. Drink the hemlock. How many lives have you absolutely turned into mud because of what you did? You and Karl Rove and the rest of you bastards. And now you come out on the front page of the New York Times with your whiny little mea culpa. Ow, I don't love him anymore. Ow, my heart is breaking. He's not what I thought he was. Oh, by the way, my son is going to go off to Iraq now and probably die. You miserable little bastard. Families of nearly 3,300 people would probably like to sit down and have a chat with you. 3,300 dead American soldiers and Marines who are in Iraq for no reason other than the man you were in love with. His greed, his lust, his play acting, his absolute insistence on dressing up and pretending he's a war president. Screw you, Matthew Dowd. Prepare yourself for the hardest blow a parent can get, and that is that your child is dead. Prepare yourself, Matthew. And understand, if you do get that phone call, it comes as a result of your action. Yours. Do I have sympathy for you? No. None. Absolutely none. Wow. Okay. And, oh, by the way, that's how I feel about that. Okay. Stormin' Norman is calling from Phoenix. Norman, welcome to the program.
Hi, Mike.
Yes.
Hi, this is Stormin' Norman from Phoenix. First of all, I wanted to say thank you for the Barbara Bush gargoyle image earlier tonight. I needed a laugh.
I'm sort of sorry about that.
No. I'm with you on the Mother Bush, but I have to disagree with you on this Matthew Downs thing.
Yeah.
And the reason why I saw this in the Sunday paper yesterday.
Can you hold on a second,
sure.
Norman? Let me do the break, and we'll come back.
You bet.
Right after the break. Stay with us. I'm Mike Malloy. This is Nova M Radio.
Give me life. Keep me. Breathe and birth. Give me hope. Help me cope with this heavy load. Trying to touch and reach you with heart and soul.
Ten before the hour, thanks to the usual crew of bandits who put this program together tonight. Ian Huff, Chris in Minnesota, Mark Marshall, Catherine Bay, the executive producer. And go to novemradio.com and sign up, okay? Don't forget, if you're in the Phoenix area, come by for the Big Nova M Birthday Bash Sunday, April 15th. You get to meet some really cool people. Jeff Farias, Bill Press, Stephanie Miller, and Tom Hartman, the professor, Marianne Gilligan, the skipper. Well, you know, you get the point. And I might be there if they let me out. If they do let me out, I'll see you Sunday the 15th, 4 p.m. for live music, entertainment, drinks, and birthday cake at Axis Radius in Scottsdale. Now, we were talking with Storm and Norman in Phoenix. Norman, go ahead. What's the disagreement about Matthew Dowd?
Well, I mean, I understand the emotion, and I share some of it. Like, you know, how convenient now that Matthew Dowd's son is on his way to war. But I think we've got to be concerned about the next 3,300 to try to make sure there isn't another 3,300 deaths. And, you know, I'd like
I'm right there with you.
Well, I think to that end, I'd like to see a Matthew Dowd a day come out and say, I break with the president, and I've seen the light. And my personal thought is, well, you know, if we immediately pound them as soon as they come out, then the Cheneys of the world and the Robes, who right now, you know that the White House is saying, who else could be cracking? Who do we know go need to talk to? And they're talking to these people saying, look, don't be a fool. You'll be ruining your career. You'll be shunned forever. I mean, this is like Jehovah's Witnesses or, you know, radical Muslims. You quit and you'll either be cured an infidel. So, you know, you're going to throw it away. And as soon as you come out, the other side's going to pound you into the ground. What's the point?
All right. Well, wait. Let me interject. This comes from Prairie 2. Hi, Mike. Matthew Dowd used to be a Bill Clinton Democrat and had the same kind of epiphany before he switched to Bush. He is positioning his corporate clients for the new reality of a Democratic administration. His only interest is maintaining corporate profits. That's one response, Norman. Here's another one. Mike, I have a more cynical view of Matthew Dowd. I read a book this year that said when you have people who exhibit a pattern of antisocial behavior and no conscience, when these people see their plans fail or are afraid of being caught or associated with failure, they'll try to drown you in crocodile tears to get your sympathy.
Well, he's a weasel, I agree. But,
okay.
But putting aside his motivation, Mike, the things he said are the things that you and I agree with, that nothing happened after Abu Ghraib and it should have, that John Kerry was right. I mean,
this is 2007. When did the revelation?
Now,
I'm sorry, Norman. I respect your position, but this is 2007. This little rat bastard could have come out and said something 3 years ago. This little rat bastard could have said something in 2003.
And how many of them haven't said anything yet and won't if Matthew Dowd gets crucified by both sides? That's all I'm saying.
Okay, if they are that cowardly.
They are.
That they Well, then, to
their
hell with them.
Their ideology is rooted in complete self-interest,
then,
right? Don't raise my taxes. Don't make me help that poor person, that sick person.
I understand.
Don't tell me not to pollute the water so I can't make a buck. It's all rooted in selfishness. And I'm just saying, let's not lose the big picture because this guy's motivations are the fact that he is a craven weasel. He's an ambitious, selfish, self-interested guy who I,
okay,
yeah,
Norman,
not,
Norman, you're making my argument. If he is those things you say he is, screw him. I don't care if he boils in his own blood. And as far
out, even a weasel can speak the truth. And what he said about the president and what he said about these things, even if for the wrong, what we think are the wrong or really lame reasons and the timing and everything, the bottom line is he did say the same things we're saying, and it's only going to be the dittohead crowd that have to hear more people from their side say those things before they get a clue. I mean, if Rush Limbaugh came out tomorrow and said, folks, I'm a sham. I've been making $20 million a year, and that's why I've said everything I've said. I mean, I'd be thrilled.
No, I wouldn't. I would say no, not me.
Need to hear that.
Well, Norman, I certainly admire you. You're a more, and I'm not trying to be snotty with you here, but seriously, you're more evolved than I am. I get a lot of emails from people who say the same thing you say, basically, and I'm just not there, pal. I am not. I do not have in my heart forgiveness for these thugs. I can't do it. But I hear you, Norman. Thanks.
I hear you. Thanks for being there, Mike.
All right. Appreciate you checking in. Take care. I wish I could be like Norman. I wish I could be like people. I read an email earlier tonight from the guy who wrote about putting hate in the box and be careful because it'll, you know. And I understand that. There was a time in my life when I used to say that. I used to say that to my kids. Hate is very toxic. It does more damage to the vessel in which it's carried than the object upon which it's poured. You know, I know all this stuff. I have adult children, and I've tried over the years to get that point across to them. They'll listen to me now online or whatever and go, Jesus, Dad, this is not what you told us. I understand. I have sunk into this abyss created by these monsters. Now, does that put me on the same level? I guess so. I guess it does. But I don't know. In order to get down into the sludge and the debris and the fecal matter and the vomit to fight these bastards, I can't maintain an attitude of forgiveness. I have no forgiveness for these people. None. Where do you begin? Who do you go back to? Where do you start? Kissinger? There are 35,000 names on the wall in the Vietnam Memorial in Washington, D.C. because Kissinger was a murderous son of a bitch. Where do you start? Do you go back to Negroponte? There are 200,000 dead people in Central America because of that son of a bitch. Where do you start? You see, I can't do it. I wish I could. I had a friend tell me a long time ago, Malloy, you're a very young soul. You're going to have to go through many, 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 many times because you are raw. You are unformed. You spit words out. You're like a child. You've got a long way to go. Okay, fine. I don't believe any of that garbage, but if it were true, I'm here now, and I hate these bastards, and I hate what they've done. And as far as forgiveness, no. Go see your priest if you want forgiveness. Go talk to your God. Go talk to your religious advisor. Go talk to your shrink, your psychiatrist. If I see your public confession, I'm going to treat it the way I've treated it tonight. It's garbage. I don't care. Drink the hemlock. Drink it! And maybe then, possibly, I doubt it, there might be some balance brought back. Sorry. That's me. I'll see you tomorrow night. Take care. Keep it lit. I'm Mike Malloy.